Remarks of the President, Lansing, Michigan, 30 October 1952.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm very, very happy to be here this morning. And it reminds me of something that happened on a former trip of mine when I went to the West Coast and came back. I've been told by the Associated Press that Michigan State has the most outstanding football team in the country. I stopped at a little town in Highland, New York, which is just north of New York City, and I'd had a letter from the president of the student council in which he said that they were having a football game that night and he wished I would stop and go to it. Well, of course I couldn't. I read his letter and then told him that I'd hoped very much. He said they hadn't had any crowds at their games. I told him that I hoped very much that he'd have a big crowd that night and that he'd win, but I couldn't take sides because I was trying to get votes and the other side would vote just as well as his would. Well, I got a telegram from him after I got back from Washington. He said the stadium was not only filled, it was overflowing, and that they won the game. Now, I hope this will bring luck to Michigan State. I'm very glad, of course, to have this opportunity to visit the capital of Michigan and the official home of Governor Williams. I hope you Democrats here in Michigan realize how fortunate you are in having Menin Williams as your governor and Blair Moody to represent you in the United States Senate. Both of them have won national recognition as two of the ablest and most promising young leaders in the entire Democratic Party. Next Tuesday, you will have a chance to show the rest of the country how much you appreciate them here in your own great state. Of course, you know that I'm not a candidate for office this year. I'm looking forward to a good rest after January the 20th. But I'm not going to rest, and I hope you won't either, between now and Election Day. I'm going to do everything I can, and I want you to do everything you can to make sure that we elect our next president, a great civilian leader, Adlai Stevenson of Illinois. The most important job that you have to do during the next few days is to get out and work to see that the people go to the polls on Tuesday. Just remember that this election and the future of our country are going to be decided by the people who vote. Those who stay at home won't have any right to complain no matter what happens to them. The right to vote is a hard-earned privilege. It is a duty you owe to your country. It is a fundamental duty because you are the government. And when you don't exercise your right to vote, you have not done your duty by this great country. Now, I've been saying all across the country that the Republican Party is not the party to trust if you want world peace. It's not the party to trust if you want prosperity at home. You can't trust it for the simple reason that its leaders are the same hopeless, outmoded mossbacks that have dominated that party for almost a century. Teddy Roosevelt got out of the party back in 1912 because he couldn't stand the old guard. Just the other day, a great liberal senator got out of it for the very same reason. That was Wayne Morris of Oregon. The old guard reactionaries have opposed almost every step that the New Deal and the Fair Deal have taken over the last 20 years to bring prosperity. The old guard isolationists have voted against most of the measures we have taken to build up a strong alliance of the free people of the world against communism. And when they haven't voted to kill these measures outright, they have voted to make them ineffective by cutting out the funds required to support them. Now, the Republican candidate for president must know that the old guard would drag him down to defeat in this election. So while he's been campaigning in the East, he's been desperately trying to convince the people he hasn't made any deals with that wrecking crew. The American people know that all the old guard are on the Republican candidate's team. If you elect that team, they will write the laws that fix the appropriation. If it were true that he had not made any deals yet, he would still have to make some later on, or the old guard wouldn't do a thing he asks in Congress. But the fact is, he's already made a cold-blooded deal with the old guard. And I thought I'd spell out that deal a little for you today, in case any of you have been taking the Republican candidate at face value when he says he's a no-deal man. You remember that Senator Taft went to Canada right after the Republican convention for a long vacation. On July the 17th, the Republican candidate sent him a telegram up there requesting his assistance in the campaign. But Senator Taft was in no hurry to come back. I suspect he figured the longer he waited, the better deal he could get from the Republican candidate. Several newspaper men went up to Canada to see Senator Taft. When they came back, they said Senator Taft wouldn't get into the campaign actively unless and until he got written assurance from the presidential candidate on at least 2 points. He wanted a definite commitment from the Republican candidate that his campaign would be an all-out attack on the domestic and foreign policies of the Democratic Party. He also wanted a commitment that Taft's supporters would get their share of the jobs if the Republican candidate were elected. He and the candidate finally met at Morningside Heights, New York on September the 12th. They spent 2 hours together. They had breakfast together. Now, does anyone doubt that the subject of their negotiation was the control of the Republican Party and of this campaign? Does anyone doubt that the control of the next administration was discussed if the Republicans won? When the meeting was over, Senator Taft read the press conference a long prepared statement, which he said he and the candidate for president had just agreed upon. That statement was an unequivocal reiteration of the views of Senator Taft and of the reactionary isolationist old guard wing of the Republican Party. It was something else, too. It was a commitment in writing that Senator Taft had served notice of what he was going to demand from the Republican candidate for president. And I think he got what he wanted a lot easier than he thought he would. Just listen to this from the statement that Taft prepared so carefully. General Eisenhower stated without qualification that in making of appointments at high levels or low levels, there would be no discrimination against anyone because he or she had supported Taft. Earlier, Taft made clear that his supporters were, in his words, at least half the party. That agreement means that the Republican candidate would make half his appointments from the ranks of the old guard. And if it didn't mean that one half the cabinet members will be from the old guard, I just don't understand the English language. Yet he says, when he's in the East, that he's a no-deal man. The Republican candidate must think that the American people have short memories and that they are easily fooled. At that same breakfast, the candidate for president even gave up the right to conduct his own campaign in his own way. He permitted Senator Taft to say for both of them in that written statement that the issue in this campaign was liberty against socialism, and that the greatest threat to liberty is internal. In other words, the danger comes not from world communism, but from our own government. That meant the candidate adopted the isolationist position. The whole struggle within the Republican Party in Chicago had been between the isolationists and those Republicans who believed in internal cooperation. We all thought that the internationalists had won, but they didn't, because the Republican candidate surrendered on that issue without one word of protest. The candidate for president also gave up his right to use his best judgment on the amount of money that would be required for national defense during the next 2 years. Senator Taft exacted a promise that the budget would be cut about $20 billion in the fiscal year 1954 and $10 billion more in the fiscal year 55. That casual pledge over a cup of coffee to cut $20 billion from our expenditures could mean the difference between peace and a third world war. Most of that reduction would have to come from national defense and mutual security. And nobody knows that better than the Republican candidate. Now, I could go on to talk about some other deals, like the one he made to give away some of your property. I refer to the rich offshore oil lands, which the Supreme Court has said belong to all the people of the United States, including you folks here in Washington. He bargained away your property for votes of the oil interests in the three coastal states, and yet he says he's made no deals. He cooked up a deal with the Shivercrat and with that Dixiecrat governor of Louisiana on these very oil properties. And they belong to you, my friends, and you ought to look out for your property. That oil deal costs you money. The Taft deal costs you something more important. I don't know whether the candidate is being dishonest or whether he's just not aware of what happened to him when he talked to Senator Taft. If he's not aware of having made a deal, he will find it out mighty fast if you people make the mistake of electing him president. He will find the old guard ready to collect on that agreement the first time he asks for a law or sends them a budget. No matter what he might want to do, they would plunge this country into isolationism. And my friends, isolationism is the road to war. No matter what he might want to do, they would take this country back to the outmoded, discredited Republican economic policies of 1920. And that kind of economics is the road to another depression. I want to make a different kind of a deal with you folks this morning, and it's one we don't have to try to hide. Let's all go to the polls on Tuesday and elect Democrats. Let's put Menin Williams back in the governor's chair here in Lansing. Let's send Dan Hayworth to Congress and Blair Moody back to the Senate. Let's vote for a government in Washington that won't sell out the people of this country, either to the reactionaries or the communist aggressors. Vote for an administration that will protect our national property and our national defense. Vote for Andy Stevenson and John Sparkman and our country to the safe and secure. I appreciate appreciate very much the courteous treatment of these young people over here, and I understand that they've been bought for the purpose. It's very fine. I have a fine feeling of courtesy from the people of Lansing, and you young people have added to it. I appreciate it very much. I want to introduce my daughter to you. She's my best asset.